This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with The Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is North South.
Everybody, Tim Kawakami here. We are here for North and South with my very famous, at least in Japan, co-host Dylan Hernandez of the LA Times. We had a whole pre-show conversation that would be very interesting for people to listen to, but we cannot put that out over the air. Isn't that always the case? Like, the pre-show conversations are the best stuff. But
we got a little too raw there, probably.
Yeah, a little too much. We got a little deletion of some of that. But Dylan, good to have you back on. We timed this specifically. Hey, the Warriors are playing the Lakers to start the post-All-Star break. We might as well just have that game happen. I was at it. You watched it. See where we are on the morning after. You know, it's not the be-all end all. It's one game. But, man, you know, I don't want to just be short, you know, small sample size, and season plays out and LeBron did not play. And so Gabe Vincent and Jared Vanderbilt and all the others, but the Lakers without LeBron stink, Dylan. Like, you just look at this is not a good collection. Anthony Davis is very good, but it's just the rest of those guys. It's so much Rui Hachimura, and, you know, Austin Reeves is fine, but he's not great. And man, they had to play him on Steph, and which was not a good thing. So I'm going to take my ESPN first take, you know, big picture, swipe at this and say, man, like, I know LeBron is at the end. I know he's been passive aggressive. I know it's uncomfortable. They cannot be without LeBron James into the future. They cannot be without LeBron James. Dylan, your response.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think honestly, it's been the same story really since since he and Anthony Davis have been here. I mean, everything is built around those two guys, right? Those two guys aren't going, like, they have zero chance, right? It's the same thing with Davis, right? I mean, you have LeBron out there and you don't have Anthony Davis out there. You're going to have run into kind of similar problems. You know, I think last year they kind of caught lightning in a bottle a little bit in that, you know, especially, you know, that Memphis series, you know, they played in that first round. You know, I don't think the opponents were ready at all for Rui Hachimura. They just, like, left him open. Mm. You know, and he can knock down like an open jumper, right? But, you know, I think they kind of re-signed him with the hope that he would kind of take that next step, right? I mean, he was, you know, kind of, I mean, you could see from the time he was in college, guy's a plus athlete, you know, but it just hasn't kind of translated into anything more. And he just seems to be a little bit stuck. You know, you brought up Reeves and the Curry thing, you know, and we've seen variations of that pretty much all year. The guy can't defend, you know, and so, you know, a lot of you get, you know, for a while, at least they got him kind of playing with the first team again. You know, for a while, they kind of had him in charge of running, you know, basically kind of leading that the second team. And really the opponents would just kind of go after him. Right. And that was a problem. So, yeah, you're right. You know, and I think they didn't, you know, I think you could obviously tell they need shooting. They don't have it. That wasn't addressed at the trade deadline. They're in this kind of weird position because I think when you have LeBron James and he's as old as he is, you're kind of in win now mode, right? But You know, it's kind of, well, I think, you know, kind of like you mentioned, they see he's at the end now or near the end. And it's like, okay, how much longer are we going to keep mortgaging the future? At some point, we're going to have to kind of rebuild this thing. And obviously, whatever they saw out there, they didn't think the price was worth it. So, but yeah, you know, they're not in great shape right now. You know, I think you're kind of looking at, right, for both the Lakers and the Warriors, I think you're looking at trying to kind of avoid that play-in tournament, get to the sixth seed. You know, Lakers are what? They're like Lakers and Warriors. I think they're ninth and tenth right now, right? You know,
So Lakers half a game over the ahead of the Warriors, but it's weird because they have played three more games, so it's hard to kind of factor all that out. But
given the fact that the Warriors, you know, they look like the team more likely to catch them, frankly, at this point, right? And you know that
nine and two in the last eleven.
Yeah, the Trace Jackson David kid. To be honest, I've never seen him. So,
He's been an interesting figure for in Warriors land. It's just this whole, I don't like coming at it from the Jesus, the Warriors look better than the Lakers, but they are in better shape. They, you know, the Lakers don't have a version of Kuminga. The Lakers don't have a version of Pajemski. I mean, Reeves is, he's above those guys because he's done it longer, but I don't know that, you know, is he that much better than Brandon Pajemski? Because Pajemski ended up being better than Austin Reeves. It's very possible. And they've got this Trace Jackson Davis, you know, we'll see where he ends up. He's an interesting and can be pretty exciting young center. They got Draymond. They just like, it's not a great team. I don't know if I'd put them like in a conference finals for sure, but like who's more likely to go on a conference finals run out of that play-in sort of situation like the Lakers did last year, the Warriors or the Lakers? I just think of the Warriors, even with LeBron over to the side. And we know what he can do, but I don't know that he can drag this group all the way there. You know, the Warriors played them tough last season, you know, six games. They didn't play great, but they played them pretty good. I think the Warriors are better set up. I don't know that they'll get through. You're going to run into a first round matchup that's going to be tough this year. It's going to be Minnesota or Oklahoma City or Denver. You're the seven seed. Let's say you win that play-in, 7-8 play-in, and then you're going to be the seven seed. And you're going to play one of those teams. But the Lakers don't have that. So that's why, like, we talked a little bit about the Warriors, you know, asking about LeBron. They're better set up to have LeBron than the Lakers are right now. They really are. Like, you could put LeBron on them if they don't have to subtract too much. And I don't know that they would have put Kuminga in that trade. If they put LeBron on this team and you subtract either Clay or Chris Paul, probably would have been Chris Paul at this point. They are a team that could win a championship. They could. Now, I still wouldn't put them as a favorites, but the Lakers with LeBron, I don't think are championship favorite. I don't see them getting through three rounds even to get to the finals. I don't like taking that point of view as the person who covers the Warriors, saying, "Oh my God, they are better shaped than the Lakers." And it's one game, but they're just better set up for a lot of different things. They really are. To get out of luxury tax, as Joe Lacob told me last week, to be a little flexible. Curry's still Curry. Draymond comes back out of suspension. Looked like he might be out of the league, and now he's been very solid for them. They just have this interesting little depth to them. They have to figure it out. I don't know what the Lakers are going to do other than, please, please, LeBron, stay healthy. Please, please, AD, stay healthy. And even then, with the top side. If this doesn't go well for the Lakers, Dylan, does LeBron not pick up that option? Are we talking about possibly him walking? I don't know where he would go. I don't know, you know, Orlando Magic or whatever. But do you think that's a live possibility? LeBron is not on this team after, you know, becoming a free agent next summer?
I don't know. I just kind of got the feeling he just wants to be here for whatever reason, right? I mean, I go back even to when he first showed up here. Right. It didn't really make sense to me from like a basketball standpoint, you know. Right. Obviously, there's got a, you know, he's obviously got like an entertainment empire now that he likes to tend to. And, you know, I think part of it
was he wanted his kids in LA, his kids. I think, too.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the other part of it, too. And so, like, I don't know if, you know, again, in kind of like you mentioned, there aren't like kind of obvious fits for where he could just kind of jump into a contending team, I think so, right? And, you know, and again, if you have a good thing going and you're a team, I mean, you know, bringing in a guy like that, and right, you need to kind of have kind of the right elements around it to make that work, because he's such a big presence, right? I mean, it's you know, we've talked, I think, on this podcast the last couple of weeks about Steph Curry and just what he means to kind of the culture there. And obviously he accommodated Durant, which, you know, it's the type of thing I'm not really sure many superstars can do, you know. And so, you know, I have a feeling, you know, because there's just been so many frustrations, I think, kind of over the years where he's kind of, again, kind of run that whole passive aggressive thing. And at the end of the day, he's kind of still here, you know. So my gut kind of tells me at this point, you know, he will continue to be passive aggressive. I'm sure he'll continue to ask that the team do this and that. And if they don't, I'm sure he won't be happy about it. But kind of at the end of the day, I still do see him staying here. I don't know.
And then, yeah, the Lakers might not be too good. You know, I mean, that's the problem. Like, yeah. you stay there, you go, I mean, I think the Warriors, certainly the people around them, had some of that. Like, Steph Curry is going to still be on this team. We know that. But how good are they going to be? When they're 19 and 24, it's a valid question. But now that they're, whatever, they're 28 and 26, I can't remember what they are, right in that area. You go, okay, yeah, there's a real shot that they're decent. You know, there's something there, and they're pointing to next season because they've got Kuminga, and they've got Pajemski, and they've got Trayce Jackson-Davis, and they could do something with Chris Paul's salary. Like, all these things aren't, you know, making you feel like they're the 2014-2015 Warriors, but they're a team that you can plausibly make an argument for, and maybe that's the best thing they can ask for. I'm not sure. I think they've kind of passed the Lakers, and that's a big deal. You know, it's not like you're just passing the Mavericks, or you're passing the Los Angeles Lakers with LeBron James and Anthony Davis. This could turn quickly. Warriors could suffer an injury. They could go flat. The Chris Paul thing's going to be interesting. Really, like, how do you work him back into what part of the rotation when he comes back, probably in 2-3 games? They're very typical Warriors. They're kind of sending out signals publicly. They kind of want him to feel it and hear it. And maybe they're having these conversations in the locker room too. Like, they're not going to mess up too much. Like, they're not going to try to just completely revamp their rotation to make sure Chris Paul plays 24, 28 minutes like he was before he got hurt. And he was playing well. I've defended him, but you also don't want to screw this up. And this is the best thing they've had in a while, since like the, you know, game 7 against the Kings last season. You don't want Brandon Pajemski to go down 18 minutes. Like, you don't want Kuminga to lose minutes. You don't want to screw around with that. You want the best thing for your team, but how Chris Paul deals with it is an interesting thing, because what was the start of the season? Are they going to start Chris Paul? If he doesn't start, what's he going to feel like? Doesn't close games. And then all through this, it feels like 8 years ago, right? The Draymond suspensions and all the things with Kuminga and Steph's, you know, going through stuff, and Clay's for sure going through stuff. And it comes back to, what's the stretch run? What if Chris Paul doesn't close games? What if he plays 18 minutes? How's he going to feel? They've gone through so much. I don't think they care that. I mean, they care, but it's not like, oh my God, like, you know, bated breath for how Chris Paul's going to, you know, determine how we feel. It's going to be winning. That's going to determine it. It's winning and losing. And if the best thing is for Chris Paul not to play down the stretch, and it will be, I think, at times, because you're going to want Pajemski or and Clay in there. We shall see. It's a very interesting way that this season has evolved. I'm going to write about it at some point, but it's just a very, you know, Chris Paul is a presence, but winning is sort of more important. Dylan Hernandez, what do you do with Chris Paul if you're the Warriors?
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I mean, I still kind of like the guy, right? I mean, you know, I don't know. I would try to figure out some way to, like, work with that, obviously. And just because to me, he's just one of the, you know, I know he, right, still titleless, whatever, but to me, he's still one of the great competitors in the league. You know, and we've kind of talked about, right, again, the kind of the locker room interactions. You know, again, a lot of times I don't think those things are necessarily indicative of, you know, right. There's sometimes a disconnect between the guy that speaks to us and the guy you see on the court. But to me, he's one of those guys. There's very much a connection there, you know. And so I've always just kind of, right, and maybe it's just because I haven't, you know, seen him as much as, you know, you have this year and, right, quite understand where he is from that standpoint. But, yeah, I think you know, he's a guy that can definitely help you win basketball games for sure, you know. And
well, you look at their big problems in the fourth quarter. Yeah, their big problems in the fourth quarter. They've been giving away stuff. I mean, if they had played well in the fourth quarter this season, they'd probably be the 4 or 3 seed right now. I mean, they have given away 5 or 6 games, no question, with turnovers and, you know, unfocused play in the fourth quarter. And what does Chris Paul can do? He can get you focused. He can get you under control. You don't throw the bad pass, get you organized. You know, defensively, rebounding, there's some issues, but, like, you got to figure that out. I can see Steve Kerr leaning towards him close games at least. And that's a very important thing. Play the last five minutes of the first half. And if it doesn't work, then they go another way. But it's probably gonna be pretty quick. But it's an interesting issue, and they kind of knew it going into it, and now they definitely have it right now. Being the North and South podcast, we must have our Japanese baseball player segment. However, the Dodgers continue to be the national focus. I'm watching their friggin' batting practice. Saw Yamamoto take a live batting practice, and right, you and I were a little skeptical if he's going to be able to throw the same amount of velocity, but it looked like he was. A lot of swings and misses. What's the vibe? I know you're not there right now, but you were there early. Like, is this going to work with Yamamoto? And is there any stumble on the Shohei Ohtani train? Are there any signs that this might not be two superstars in the midst of the Dodgers?
Yeah, I mean, I still have, you know, questions about Yamamoto and the durability, right? You know, one scout that I spoke to who, you know, is a frequent visitor to Japan and knows that league very well, you know, told me, look, this guy might pitch a perfect game at some point, right? He might throw a no-hitter. Like, when he's good, he's going to be really good. The question is how is he going to kind of adapt to pitching every 5 or 6 days as opposed to once every 7, right? So I think that out of the gates, I think he's going to be very good. You know, one thing that did strike me was just kind of, he has like a certain confidence, I think, that I don't always necessarily detect in Japanese players. You know, obviously it's kind of this, you know, it's a culture where people kind of put themselves down a lot and, right, even you work because you're not worthy of something, you know? And I just kind of remember, like, I think it was either his first or second bullpen session. You know, he had trouble throwing his splitter, right? Balls were just kind of floating up a little bit. And and, you know, that happens in Arizona. The air is dry, right? Pitchers from all walks of life talk about that the balls don't break the way they do in other places. And he was just kind of afterwards was just kind of very matter-of-factly, yeah, I'll take care of that. You know, sure enough, next bullpen session, pitchers were going where they had to go. So it kind of like, oh, okay. So he's a little bit different, I think, than the other guys. As a negative, kind of compared him to like Kenta Maeda. My guess is he's going to be better than Kenta Maeda, but I think that some of the issues that Maeda have, again, are going to affect him in terms of, you know, again, the durability. To me, the question is like, how does he look in, you know, July, August, like when you're kind of getting to like the dog days of the season. As far as Ohtani goes, it just seems he's, you know, I don't know, first light BP, he homers, seems like he's hitting the crap out of the ball. Seems like he's having a lot of fun too, you know, of all guys, Teoscar Hernandez has become like his best friend. You know, they posted like a little
videos of those two guys. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and it's funny, right? Because I think like as Americans, a lot of times we tend to be a little status conscious, you know, the Latin guys are all just kind of like, whatever, they'll talk to anybody, you know? So, you know, and I spoke to Hernandez a little bit, seems like a very friendly guy. I can kind of see why Ohtani likes him. And so that's kind of the thing too, is I think that there is this different vibe when I think, you know, in Anaheim, there was so much of this. I think Ohtani felt this is on me, right? Like I need to get to the team, to the playoffs, where now he's in an environment where like October, honestly, is kind of considered a given here, right? It would be a disaster, right? And I have serious questions, by the way, about that starting rotation in terms of how will that rotation, you know, how much of it will still be standing in October, right, when you really need to throw those guys out there? You know, will half of these guys be injured? I mean, who knows? That said, you know, they have enough guys that again, can beat the Rockies on a random Tuesday. They're going to win. You know, the expectation is that they absolutely have to win the division. They don't make the playoffs, it's going to be a disaster, right? you know, just an absolute calamity for the organization. And I think kind of being in this environment, he's able to kind of relax a little bit more, have a little more good time. You know, he looks around and he sees guys like, hey, you know what? That guy's a good player. That guy's a good player. That guy's been in the playoffs this many times. That guy's made this many all-star teams. And probably, you know, his, I think him being around better players has picked him up a little bit. How are things over in Giants land? I mean, you know, a couple years ago, obviously, they pulled that surprise there, won the division from the Dodgers. But, I mean, is there any chance of anything like that happening here?
Hey, you know, who knew it was going to happen a couple years ago? But there's not a lot of excitement, at least around the fandom. They were hoping for more, and the Dodgers signed the two guys that the fans and the Giants ownership wanted, as Farhan Zaidi told them, like, hey, we would have signed, offered them $800 million too, right? We would have done that. But they're not all stardom. There's just not stars. And I kind of wrote this, I think, yesterday. It's like, it isn't so much about them not being able to sign this free agent stars. I don't think anybody, you know, looked at Farhan Zaidi and say they're bringing him in to go get super. That's Dave Dombrowski, right? That's other people who do that. But he wanted to get one or two to supplement a great farm system producing great players. And that just has not happened. They brought up a bunch of guys, some of them last year by necessity. None of them look like stars, though. You know, Patrick Bailey's a really solid catcher. He's going to be their catcher for 5-10 years. That's great. He does not look, you know, he completely, his bat fell off the cliff at the end of last year. He just had played too much, probably. Mark Luciano's penciled in as their starting shortstop. I think there's going to be some bumpy times with that. The hitting hasn't been great. He's got a lot of tools. It had to come from that, though, and other than Kyle Harrison, who is, you know, slotted to be their number two starter, also a young pitcher, so you never know what's going to happen there. There's just no star power, and when you're in the division with the Dodgers, which is the ultimate amount of star power, but are just trying to get through, you know, a tough series in, you know, September, stars carry you through this. Like, you know, Buster Posey carried them through stuff. Tim Lincecum carried them through stuff. You know, Pablo Sandoval, who is back in the team. Well, I don't know what the hell's going on with this non-roster invitation, but whatever. Pablo Sandoval is, you know, carried them through World Series games. And they just don't have that. So, and I do push back on saying, you just got to get stars. You got to get stars because, like, you know, you got to win games. It isn't just about stars. But lacking them, you really feel it. And they felt it. Jung Hao Lee, I think, is going to be fine. Probably an overpay, but he's going to be fine. He's going to be better than anything else they've had at center field for a while. But other than that, I don't feel the stardom, certainly not as good as the Dodgers, but of course, you know, then you get into a short series and see, I think they should got to sign one of the Boris guys, at least one, maybe two. Chapman's been penciled in with them. I'm sure Bob Melvin would really like that. And it would help them defensively, which I think could be a problem. I was not a J.D. Davis. You know, I just thought he was terrible last year. He put some numbers up. I just thought he was – any good pitcher beat him. And they had too many guys that just – if you put a good pitcher out there, they get beat. I like guys who, like, battle the tough pitchers. Or you got to have at least two of them. And they had none of them last year. I think Chapman, we'll see, could be one of those guys. And we know he's such a plus-plus-plus defender at third. Could help out Luciano, you know, cover some of that ground on that side of the infield. And maybe Chris Nell, you know, another former Melvin guy, you know, they've got the money. You know, I think it does get to the point where, you know, maybe Zaidi or maybe somebody in there are so intent on not signing a bad deal that you give up the opportunity to sign a good one. And they haven't had a bad deal, right? They haven't had a Carlos Rodon extension, like a deal like the Yankees gave him. They haven't had some of those Trevor Story sort of deals. Anthony Rendon, who I think we're going to talk – let's talk about that in a little bit. But you also need to get one of those guys if you don't have farm systems, guys. And they don't. And they're in that combo period here where – I don't know. I mean, it just – it's lack of excitement. Maybe they get off to a 20-10 start. Things will change. But it's just hard to say why people should really believe in this team. It's hard to say that. I try to be optimistic about smart organizations, and I think Farhan Zaidi is very smart. It just hasn't happened yet. And when you stare at the Dodgers, it's like you just, that lineup is just so much better than the Giants. It just is. And we'll see with the rotation. And I'll Walker Buehler and all these question marks, but Like, they can just throw guys out there. Like, even if two guys blow up, they can still throw guys out there. I don't know if the Giants can do that. If Logan Webb goes down, they're in trouble. They're already in some trouble. Their back end is not strong. Like, they could use two, just spend some money. And if it's a waste, it's a waste. I think they almost have to do that. They're at the point where just spend some money, not $300 million, but spend $180 on two players and see where you are. Chapman and Snell, plop them in, see where you are. If there are mistakes, they're mistakes. You're rich enough to be able to afford it. They just don't seem to be in that place where, like, we're rich enough and we can afford it. They're just not there. But let's talk about Anthony Rendon. I don't know how much dealings you've had with him. He seems like a very surly guy, a little bit of a doesn't want to deal with anybody and got his money. Maybe I'm simplifying it, but him saying last week, first time he's talked in a while, been ridiculously injury prone through these seasons with the Angels, has many more years left on a massive deal, but saying, like, oh yeah, baseball's not a priority for me. It's my family and my religion, which I understand. Anyone can agree with that. But just saying that you feel like you have to say that, tells me baseball isn't even one of your top five priorities. Like, you're just there as a job. And at some point you cannot be a good player if you just think that way. If you're just walling everything off, saying it doesn't matter that much to me, just if you're saying it, it means it really doesn't mean, you know, you're trying to lessen the impact of a bad season. And that means you will have a bad season, to me. Dylan, what was your thought about Rendon?
Yeah, so I think, you know, and it's slightly related. You know, I did something with Mookie Betts when I was down at camp, kind of, right? There's this kind of perception, I think, you know, in and around the team, right? Some people questioning Betts' commitment, right? Because he's got a podcast going on and this and that. Now, you know, with Betts, when I asked him, hey, like, does this matter to you? He kind of went the other way, right? No, absolutely, this matters to me. I, you know, even though I got like 50 things going on, I'm good at like switching my attention, this and that, you know? So that's kind of the way he took it. Now with, you know, and like the thing is with Betts, I'd kind of heard this for years, and kind of my contention was always that, like, this guy's like fundamentally very good baseball player, right? This guy knows how to read balls when they hit the wall. Like, he knows how they're going to come off. And that, to me, to be good at the fundamentals, it means you have, you know, become like a slave to repetition. And if you're not, right, and the only way you're willing to subject yourself to just doing the same thing over and over is if you care. And so, honestly, I think, like, with Rendon, it's more kind of his pride, I think, right? Because this guy was a very, very good baseball player at some point, right? Not just offensively, defensively. This guy was also very good. Now, you could argue, you know, I heard he was a good basketball player and stuff in high school too. So, you know, I'm not saying this guy's not like physically blessed, but I think that also he probably cares more than he lets on. And I think that it's just gotten one of those, you know, again, he's kind of got that, like, I'm too cool for school type thing, right? I think, you know, LeBron James's first year when he was in LA, you know, playing with all those kids and they didn't make the playoffs, you know, he was kind of like, you know, I think I asked him at some point, like, well, how much does this bother you that you're not going to be part of this thing this year? You know, and he kind of played, well, you know, what can I do type, you know, I can't remember. He gave kind of a very dismissive answer, like, no, it doesn't bother me, you know. And when I see Rendon, that's kind of what I see. Now, I'm with you in terms of when you kind of verbalize that and you've kind of already kind of taken that stance, right? You're giving yourself like a buffer, right? Like you said, you're couching the potential of a bad season. And, you know, especially the position that he's in right now, I think you got to be all in all the time, you know, because the odds are probably that he's physically, my guess is that it's because it's always something different too, right? And what is it that Kobe said, you know, at some point you're not injured, you're just old. And that's probably where Rendon is right now, you know? And so for him to kind of get back to that point, to me, it requires kind of full buy-in just to give yourself a chance, right? And maybe the chance of him, again, being the same player again is, I don't know, 5%, 10%, you know? And maybe that full-on commitment increases that only by 5% more, right? And so the fact that, like, you know, okay, the odds are long, you know, and he's kind of couching it, to me, is not a great sign. You know, I mean, again, I compare it to a guy I've seen, right? You know, again, one of the, you can say whatever you want about his October record, but, you know, in Clayton Kershaw, we see this guy who, okay, if I have any opportunity to do something, I'm going to like buy in 1,000%. Now, we saw that go very badly last year and, you know, game one of that division series against the, you know, against the Diamondbacks, where he couldn't even get out of the inning, right? And, you know, it went really bad, but he went in there with the conviction of like, I'm going, right, I can do this. And I think that, you know, kind of to your point, that's where it kind of starts. And yeah, you know, and I think the bad thing in Rendon's case too, though, is I think it kind of starts his corner-ish, you know, he doesn't have a corner locker, but it's kind of close to like, you know, one of the corners there. There is kind of this like bad vibe that comes out of that room there, you know? And I think that if you're going to have a guy that's going to, you know, that's, you know, just turned into like a money suck, whatever. I mean, I always admired like Barry Zito, right? The little that I saw of him, right? Just the way he handled, you know, just not being very good after signing that massive contract with the Giants. You know, just because I think that stuff like that, I mean, it matters because it affects the rest of the room, you know? And right now Rendon is it's all bad right now. Right. And they're dealing with, you know, right, Ohtani leaving. Now you have Trout coming out saying, yeah, you know, I want to stay here, but I might change my mind, which is a huge departure for him, you know. And now, you know, this Rendon situation, obviously, is kind of the one thing that everybody's like talking. It's become the thing that everybody's kind of the negative thing that everybody's latched onto now. So, yeah, it's not a helpful situation. I mean, I wouldn't be, you know, I don't know. I think he's got like 4 more years left of that deal. You know, I wouldn't be shocked if we, you know, he doesn't get to the end of it. And at some point they just release him. I mean, we saw Perry Manassian, you know, at some point he cut Albert Pujols, just released him. You know, I wouldn't be shocked if something like that happened. At this point, it would surprise me just because there's time left on that deal. But yeah, it's definitely not a good situation there.
I'd say less than 3 years. It might be two more years just looking at this. What do you think is going to happen with Trout? I mean, could they trade Trout?
You know, that's the funny thing is I'm not sure how much like trade value he has right now either. You know, I think the irony here, and this is kind of the problem that the Angels have, is that like he is the face of their franchise right now. Right. And, you trade him, he at least will help you sell some tickets, you know, and now you trade him, you're probably having to pay down half that contract. You know, I think around the trade deadline last year, I kind of floated that by, you know, different people around the league and stuff. And that was kind of the consensus, right? Is that like, well, you know what, if he were a free agent right now, he could probably still get $20 million a year. Well, he makes close to 40. So that means you're paying down half just to get rid of the deal. That means you're getting like no legitimate prospects in return, right? So now if you actually want prospects, you're almost having to buy them in a way, right? You pay maybe $10 million extra a year or something to get better prospects in return. Obviously, you know, teams value, I think, frankly, overvalue prospects these days, but they're, right, they cost a lot of money to get. And so they're kind of stuck in this weird position where, okay, well, you know, I don't think he's going to ever force his way out. That's not his personality, you know? So in that case, if you're already, it's going to come down to Artie Moreno making that call, you know, and it's tough. Again, he's a guy who plays, you'd be happy if you get 120 games out of him in a season right now. And ironically, probably the one team that probably could really use him is the team that Artie Moreno wouldn't trade him to. And that's the Dodgers, you know, because the Dodgers have signed guys with the intention of, okay, you know, they signed Rich Hill years ago. Okay, you know what? We don't need 30 starts. We need 20. Just make sure you're ready to go in October, you know? And if you treat Trout like that, I think for the Dodgers, right, they wouldn't mind probably paying them, you know, maybe they wouldn't, you know, require the full.
Hey, I can think of it. I can think of a team in San Francisco that one might do a deal like that. Like just say, we'll take you for 115 games and if we're in a playoff series, the other team does not want to play against Mike Trout. Put you in right field, can DH some, you're going to get some games off. And if you can figure out a deal where you're not paying a huge prospect, you know, upside and you're, you know, so maybe they take him for $30 million of that. I think the Giants would do that. Like, again, it's not the great young star that everybody wants, but it's Mike Trout and he might give you three really good years. And again, he's almost like a Steph Curry, LeBron thing. Like just get him into the playoffs. And we know with the expanded playoffs, it's not going to be that hard to get in. 86 wins could get you in. And the Giants were not that far from that last season after the, you know, with a fired manager. I think they do that. I think the Giants would, if they didn't have to give up Kyle Harrison, they'd give up just anything else in their farm system, and they'd pay up on Trout. Maybe not $40 million, but they'd pay up $30 million. They'd take that over, and you go Trout, Jung Ho Lee. You know, I don't know who else they would have. Lamont Wade. I mean, listen, that's not a great. Michael Conforto, Patrick Bailey. I just like you can make that argument in your head, like this. If you're a rich team, this is how you do it. And like you saying the Dodgers made me think like the Giants should be doing almost anything the Dodgers do to a less degree, but they should be doing that sort of thing. It's kind of why they hired Farhan Zaidi. Like,
yeah, and that's the thing, right?
The franchise that's trying to do it.
Yeah, you know, I mentioned Rich Hill, right? Farhan was around when that deal happened. So, yeah, I think for sure. Yeah, now that you mention it, I could kind of see that. It'd be a little bit unconventional, you know, from the sense that, you know, again, with the Dodgers, again, October, it kind of seems it doesn't matter who gets hurt, right? You know, they miss Mookie Betts for a season. They'll survive that. They have enough depth to get there. You know, with the Giants, probably Trout becomes a little bit more, you know, plays a bigger role in helping them get there in the first place, you know? So, right, they might be a little bit more reluctant about the 120-game thing. But, you know, it's kind of one of those things, too, though. I do wonder, right, if you get Trout in, now all of a sudden does, like, you know, whatever you have to pay to get Chapman in, does that become something you can stomach a little more, right? You know, going out and make that extra investment, you know, because sometimes I do think it's kind of like, okay, well, you know, again, you mentioned kind of all the Boris guys that are out there. You know, none of these guys are probably going to change their franchise on their own, right? Now, you know, and you brought up the idea of signing two of them. And that's the thing, right, is if you bring in like another superstar, out of one or two of these guys, all of a sudden now, yeah, your franchise has changed.
You would be a team that even the Dodgers would have to go, okay, you know what? We got to deal with these guys. I don't think you think of the Giants that way. Maybe Logan Webb is, you know, he's certainly been a good in playoffs. They got some guy, but it wouldn't be, oh my God, watch out. Now they, you know, listen, they've got Robbie Ray coming back from the, you know, injury. You would see how that Alex Cobb. I just think, if they could figure out a way to get Mike Trout, that's how you leverage money. That's how you leverage money. Like other teams won't, the White Sox, the Rays, these other teams won't do it. This is how you do it. The Padres overextended themselves with these things. I'm just talking myself into it. I would do it. You know, I just don't think it would cost that much. Just talking, like, you know, if the, you know, the alternatives to trading to the Dodgers, as you said, Moran's not doing that. So I'm going to convince myself on this. This podcast is going to be the Mike Trout to the Giants podcast. It was the Jim Harbaugh to the Chargers podcast. And guess, look what happened, Dylan Hernandez. Look what happened.
It did.
Do it. Do it, cowards. Do it. Manifest it. All right. We were going to talk about some other issues, Dylan, but we've gone too far. We're going to get into a media industry conversation at some point. It's too late in the proceedings right now. People seem to like to hear that. I think you and I have some, you know, opinions on this, maybe not exactly the same, but we've both gone through some issues with places we've been in. We've had experiences. I would like to hear your thoughts on that, but we'll save that. Let's tease that for another episode, maybe when there isn't as much going on, but there always seems to be stuff going on. But I eagerly await maybe next episode, maybe next week, we'll be doing a little media industry stuff. If you've got any, you listen to this and you've got any specific questions, you might want to fire at me or Dylan about the media industry. I think we would be more than happy to answer a few of them if they're good ones. Dylan, you got anything else?
No, I got to get my more. I haven't had my morning coffee. So
I need to do that goodness.
Before I get my withdrawal.
I have to have my coffee. No wonder you were so sleepy and drowsy and I had to carry you this episode. Usually it's the other way around. But Dylan, my back hurt from hearing this podcast today, so I'm happy for it. Anytime I can do it for you, Dylan. Anytime.
I appreciate you
carrying me other times. All right, everybody, that's the show for today. Say bye now.
All right, see ya.